Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself, the most fearless show in sports. I'm Jason Whitlock. Marcellus Wiley's off today. Coming up, I'll tell you who Jerry Jones just put a whole bunch of pressure on in Dallas, but we start today with the NFL draft. All right, years ago, long before Reggie Bush wore diapers, there was a cereal commercial featuring a boy named Mikey. He hated everything, except Life cereal. You try it. I'm not gonna try it. Let's get Mikey. He hates everything. I've been called the Mikey of sports journalism. It's not true. Like Mikey, I'm just finicky. I've reached the conclusion I hate everything about the 2019 NFL QB draft class. There's a better chance that Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones, and Dwayne Haskins are all mediocre more than any of them becoming a star. They're all reaches. Murray isn't tall enough to ride the big roller coasters at Six Flags theme park. The Giants picked Jones at number 6 because New York general manager Dave Gettleman heard a rumor Vince McMahon had Jones high on the XFL draft board. The Redskins took Haskins because Daniel Snyder's son went to high school with him. The QB draft was like watching me press my bets on a craps table because I just know the table is about to get hot. Super Bowl quarterbacks all pretty much have one thing in common: lots of college playing experience. 9 quarterbacks have won the last 16 Super Bowls. Russell Wilson, Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, Eli Manning, Drew Brees, Nick Foles, Joe Flacco, Tom Brady, and Aaron Rodgers. They all started a minimum of 22 games in college. They averaged 35 starts. College experience is the best predictor of NFL success. Murray started 17 games in college. Haskins started just 14. Jones started 36 games over 3 years. Kyler Murray went number 1 simply because the Cardinals made the asinine decision to hire a failed college coach who couldn't win in the Big 12 with Patrick Mahomes. The offense that was good enough to get Cliff Kingsbury fired at Texas Tech is now supposed to be the offense that takes on the NFC West. This makes no sense. I'm not going to pretend that I watched a lot of Duke football. I don't know much about Daniel Jones. But I've never seen this kind of consensus among draft nicks about a single player. Todd McShay swears Jones is a mobile Brock Osweiler. And I've yet to see anyone viciously attack McShay for the opinion. Gettleman won't even do it. Remember when former Colts general manager Bill Tobin lit into Mel Kiper after Kiper blasted the Colts for passing on Heath Shuler and Trent Dilfer? Who the hell is Mel Kiper? Tobin said. Gettleman won't defend his selection of Jones. Why should I? Did you know that 27 different quarterbacks have started for the Redskins since they won the Super Bowl 27 years ago? It's a motley crew that includes Danny Werfel, John Beck, Rex Grossman, Gus Frerotte, and John Freeze. History says Haskins won't be the answer in Washington. He thinks the league done messed up when it's actually the Redskins. But what do I know? I ate everything. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports analysts Reggie Bush and Mark Slareth. Guys, I'm going to start with you, Reggie. Crazy to think that all 3 of these guys will be busts.
It is crazy to think that, but it's not far off because I feel like when you look at the 3 quarterbacks and their situations that they've gone into, I feel like Kyler Murray right now is maybe set up for failure quicker than the other 2 quarterbacks, Daniel Jones and Haskins, because he has to play right now, right? And because he's going to a team that they don't have a ton of weapons. They got a head coach, first time rookie head coach, who you just alluded to, who struggled at the college level. So there's a lot of figuring it out that's going to go on. And I just don't know, as a rookie quarterback, you want to be trying to figure it out with your coaching staff. I go back to my time in Miami when we drafted Ryan Tannehill. And I thought maybe the worst thing that they did was they put him into the starting role too quick. Because at the college level, he didn't have a ton of experience, like Kyler Murray, like Dwayne Haskins. And they put him into the starting role too fast. And his confidence, they started to chip away at his confidence because he didn't play as great as probably he wanted to, right? And so I feel like as a rookie quarterback, confidence is everything. And right now, when I look at Kyler Murray, he's set up right now to fail because he doesn't have a ton of weapons around him.
It doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, you come into this league as a rookie quarterback, first off, you have to understand how the league is set up and how college football is set up. See, when I came into the league, it was set up as a trickle-down, like Reaganomics, right? Yeah. Trickle-down. The NFL affected college, which has affected high school. Mm-hmm. It's trickle up now. High school has affected college, which is starting to permeate the National Football League. But there's still a large difference between college football and the spread offenses that you're asked to participate in and what they're doing in the National Football League level. Here's the other thing. You mentioned it, and I think it's a great point. Experience, as JCPenney once said, is the best teacher of all, right?
Yeah.
Experience is. You don't have a lot of experience. And oftentimes what happens to you in the college game is you have a lot of success, not because of study habits, not because of you really understand football. It's because you're such a gifted athlete.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get in the NFL and you start to realize, shoot, everybody's really good, right?
Everybody's really good.
And I think for these guys, the game is about the neck up. In the pro football, your default mechanism better be from your neck up. Mm-hmm. In college football, your default mechanism can be athletic. Mm-hmm. It can be your athleticism. I think that's an issue.
I like Reggie's point about, because I think Kyler Murray's the most talented of these three.
Yep. Sure.
Let's say we can all agree. But he's also, I think, and people haven't given this a lot of thought like Reggie has, he's stepping into the most dangerous situation.
So dangerous.
Because that organization is permeated right now with desperation. Mm-hmm. If this doesn't work, Steve Keim is toast.
Mm-hmm.
He's hired, he's the general manager president. He's hired Cliff Kingsbury, who failed at Texas Tech. The whole league thinks this is a bad hire. There's pressure on Cliff Kingsbury. Sure. Now he's bringing in an offensive system from the college game, and we've drafted a quarterback to run this specific offense that worked and scored points in the college game but didn't win a lot of games.
Yeah.
We're bringing that to the NFL. I think that kind of desperation that's pervasive throughout the Arizona organization is unhealthy for a young quarterback.
I would agree with you 100%. And again, like I alluded to, not having enough weapons around him, you go into a situation where you don't have a veteran presence in front of you. Like, I attribute a lot of my early success to Deuce McAllister because he was a veteran in front of me. He showed me how to get it done on and off the football field for 2-3 years. And I was able to go in and take a lot of what I learned from him and then implement that into my own game. That's why I said Dwayne Haskins, you know, he has Case Keenum, Alex Smith is still there, Colt McCoy, Daniel Jones has Eli Manning, and he has guys he can learn from, and he doesn't have to play right now. Kyler Murray has to play right now.
Oh, no, Steve Keim announced today his opening day quarterback starter. It's Kyler Murray. the guys, I don't know if they had that rookie minicamp or anything.
I don't think he's done anything yet.
He's already been, and look, he's the number one pick. We expected him to start, but Baker Mayfield went number one. He didn't start right away. They're throwing this kid into the fire May 2nd.
Because you have to understand how the system is set up. Because the system now, with the last collective bargaining agreement, says we're not investing that much. Like, would any of these guys been first-round picks if you had the 2010 system where you had to pay $75, $80 million, guaranteed money?
Not at all.
They're not even first-round picks, right? Now that you can get away with paying them $20, $30 million, and you say, hey, I spread it out over 5 years because I've got the option, like, I'm really not deep. This does not hamstring my franchise.
Yeah.
So the guy who has the best chance of these guys, because I think he's the guy that's going to sit the bench for a while, is Daniel Jones.
Mm-hmm.
To learn the NFL game, he's got the best opportunity to actually absorb. See, just because you play a pro sport doesn't make you a professional. And when we come in as young players, you talked about Deuce McAllister. Mm-hmm. You have to learn the NFL game.
Yeah.
Not only that, you have to learn how to study.
Yeah.
You have to learn how to prepare. It's completely, it's a different animal. And so all of a sudden you're going to throw these guys in, and there's a difference between watching film and studying film. And you get to the point where you're just like, it's like watching a movie as opposed to really understanding and studying what you're looking at.
And I'm going off memory here, but Washington signed Case Keenum, correct?
Yes.
And correct. So I believe, they traded for Case Keenum. I think Dwayne Haskins has a shot at sitting at least for 6-7 games and learning some things, because I guarantee you Daniel Snyder really wants Dwayne Haskins to succeed. The last guy he was all in on, Robert Griffin III, mm-hmm. that blew up in his face. Mm-hmm. Maybe they put too much on him too early, blew his head up. I think they'll take a slower approach with Haskins. I'm just not sure. Again, the book is pretty clear. He had a limited amount of college experience.
Yeah.
That doesn't translate well to the NFL. I've never heard any draft pick beat up the way Daniel Jones has been beat up by the people that study the draft. He's, you know, Todd McShay is just out there. This guy is a backup quarterback. I can't discount all the experts that watch this. Yeah. I'm just not sure if he has the tools to be a successful quarterback.
I think he has the athleticism. I mean, arm talent's another question. Decision making, like I said, from the neck up. You talk about Haskins, unbelievable. Unbelievable what he did, but you always have to look back and say, how come you couldn't beat out JT Barrett?
Yeah.
Right? And you threw 50 touchdowns, and I get it, and it's an impressive body of work. But then I watched you play Michigan and hang 60 on them, and they're supposed to be your number one rival in Big Ten football, and that wasn't a like-athlete-to-like-athlete game. I mean, you're playing against a JV team when you're talking about the difference in athletes from Michigan to Ohio State. Yeah. It wasn't even close. And so look, when you get into a competition where everybody is strong, everybody is fast, everybody is athletic, and then some guys, you know, from the neck up, they understand the game.
Yeah.
Like you get it's shocking. You get wompy jawed, you know?
That was the biggest difference for me. The biggest adjustment I had to make, because the college level, I could just outrun everybody, right? I could outrun people to the sideline. I could make a move on them in the open field and create my own space. I remember my first preseason game, we played the Cowboys, and DeMarcus Ware had me one-on-one on just a regular swing route.
Right.
And he was running step for step with me. I thought I had an easy touchdown. He ended up tackling. This is on like the 5-yard line. I didn't score the touchdown. And so that, to me, was my first introduction into the speed of the game, and this is just how smart guys were.
Let me ask you real quick, because I've always wondered this, and people discount this. How big a difference was it with the hash marks? So that you could get that width, and you could beat people to the edge and stuff. It's a completely different game.
Yeah, it's a completely different game, and I think you alluded to it as well. Is there are a lot of, everybody in NFL is smart. I mean, everybody's fast, big, strong, so you're not going to get away with just overpowering people or outrunning people. It's the mental side of it where guys
yes, and I think for quarterbacks, it's not just they're all big, fast, and strong. They're more assignment sound because they're not studying basket weaving in their spare time. They're all in on football most of the day. I'm not saying everybody's a genius in the NFL, but when that's all you do from 8 a.m. until 5 p.m., you're more assignment sound, and that a lot of times catches up with the quarterbacks. Quickly, I just want to ask this question. Are NFL teams too desperate right now to find their franchise quarterback? Is that what's driving these reaches early in the draft?
Well, yeah, they're desperate, but again, because we as players, you know, we don't have enough backbone to stand up to the ownership. Yeah. We don't. We never have. I'm part of that. I'm guilty as charged. Okay, that we gave in when I was asked to buy the Players Association about the rookie wage scale. I said to them, "You guys are crazy if you sign into this." Mm-hmm. And they said, "Why?" Because we don't like giving all this money to rookies and then those rookies, you know, don't perform and so that was their theory. And I go, if you think whatever money you save on rookies is going to be passed to the veterans, you guys are stupid. Mm-hmm. It's like this bar I used to hang out at, Chilkoot Charlie's in Anchorage, Alaska. Their motto was, where we cheat the other guy and pass the savings on to you, right? Like, if you think the owners are going to save millions of dollars on a rookie wage scale and disperse it good fairies to the rest of the players, you're stupid. But we signed it, and now you can draft a quarterback in the first round. You can chase a quarterback. You can overdraft a guy. Yep. And you're like, it really doesn't hamstring our franchise like it did when you took a Sam Bradford and had to pay him $50 or $60 million. Right. It's different.
It is different. And I agree with you 100% that I think teams are too desperate to try to find their franchise quarterbacks right now.
Time now for a big story. Let's move to Dallas, where Jerry Jones is raising expectations, saying there's no reason the Cowboys shouldn't be better this year than they were last year, especially on offense. With Dak Prescott and Jason Garrett in the last year of their contracts, the pressure is on, especially after Dallas promoted Kellen Moore to offensive coordinator, who some people believe could be the coach in waiting. All right, the question here is, who's under the most pressure from Jerry Jones, Dak Prescott, or Jason Garrett? I say it's Jason Garrett just because Kellen Moore has been promoted to offensive coordinator, and he may be the head coach in waiting. They've got Jason Garrett's replacement perhaps lined up. They don't have a replacement for Dak.
I don't know. Well, I played with Kellen Moore in Detroit, and you know, I'm actually happy to see that he's, you know, been making moves and become the offensive coordinator, because I think he is a really bright mind. But I just think Jason Garrett, man, he has to be on the hot seat. But every year, it feels like we say this, and every year he somehow keeps his job. And I'll say this, Jerry Jones is one of the most loyal, one of the most loyal owners in the NFL, because he is stuck by Jason Garrett's side through hell and high water. And it seems like every year when we're sitting here talking about this, that Jason Garrett somehow, they make it to the play, they squeak into the playoffs, or something happens throughout that season where he keeps his job. And so it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out this year, because I also believe that Dak Prescott as well is maybe a little bit on a hot seat, because they played well last year, right? But he was the second most sacked quarterback in the NFL. He got saved throughout that season by his defense. They had a really good defense last year. The game against the Rams in the playoffs, he had a really good game. He was 20 for 32, 266 yards, a touchdown. That's a really good game for him, and they still lost the game, right? And they had a great defense and a really good run game. And usually that's the formula when you get to the playoffs to winning.
Who's under the most pressure?
I think it's Jason Garrett.
I think it's Dak Prescott. I mean, Jason Garrett has always been, like, he's the de facto coach because Jerry Jones is coaching this team. Like, you know what I mean? He's a marionette. Like, he's just got his puppet, right? So I look at Dak Prescott. I mean, you're playing for another contract. You're playing for a big contract. You've seen the money that's out there, $35 million a year to Russell Wilson. You have got to produce. And I like Dak Prescott as a player. I really do. Some of those sacks that you mentioned are Dak Prescott-induced sacks because you hold the ball too long. You're not quite 100% sure in some cases. But look at this. Jerry Jones came out yesterday, I guess, and said, hey, man, I fully expect this to be better than we were last year. There is strength up the middle. You look at the way they're built. You talked about their defense, and their defense is outstanding. Really, I think the best two young linebackers in football on their defense. You've got a great pass rusher, a good secondary. Strength up the middle. They're getting Travis Frederick back from his illness. He'll be great for them. He's a great player. They're getting Witten back to be the security blanket that Dak Prescott needs. Mm-hmm. They went and got a slot receiver in Randall Cobb, who to me is, he may not be the most dynamic guy. He's smart, and that guy can play inside. He can play outside. He can play in the backfield. He gives them another element to take pressure off the outside. To me, Dak Prescott, this is your prove-it year. You have got a football team that should win the NFC East and should compete deep into the playoffs. That's on you.
But let me ask you this question. Do you think that Dak kind of affords them to be able to pay other people, right? Because he's not going to demand a super big contract, so they don't have to push a lot of money into that position. Sure. They can kind of spread it out more.
If they're proactive, if they came to him right now and said, hey, man, we're going to take care of you, and we're going to pay you, what, like 20, like, because he still has probably, what, 2 years left? He's got this year and the fifth-year option?
Yep.
So if you came to him early and you were proactive, which would be the smart thing to do, you could probably lock him up.
I don't think that would be the smart thing. I let him play this year, and if it doesn't go well, based off what Witten, Randall Cobb, Amari Cooper, Frederick back on the offensive line, anchoring the offensive line, if it doesn't go well this year, I draft a rookie quarterback and start the cycle all over again. I try to win the following year with all my pieces with a rookie quarterback. Jerry Jones, to me, is saying 12 wins minimum here, guys. We won 10 last year without all the perfect pieces. I've given you the perfect pieces. We've got a creative offensive coordinator, we think, in Kellen Moore. We think he's our Sean McVay. I brought Jason Witten back, saved him from being a bomb on TV. We have a deep threat, a guy that can stretch the field, and Amari Cooper, and we got a slot receiver. Dak, deliver. And if Jason Garrett survives, it will. And they have a poor season. They win 9 games or something like that, or even 10 and bow out of the first round of playoffs. If he survives, it will be because Jason Garrett has been saying behind the scenes for the longest, Dak ain't good enough. And Jerry's Dak's biggest supporter. Mm-hmm. Jerry's the guy that sees Dak as a potential Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. And I think some of the guys on the coaching staff don't see that. And if Jason survives, it'll be because he's been playing all the time behind the scenes, like, hey, Jerry, we're overextended here.
But who else do they have, though? Who else do they have nobody
behind
them?
You draft a guy next year.
Right, but you draft a guy next year, and that's a couple-year process, and then your left tackle is in retirement. Mm-hmm. Your right guard
is... Why is it a couple-year prospect? You can win with a rookie quarterback if all the pieces around you are right.
Wait, which rookie quarterback's winning Super Bowls? We're talking about people. Don't you show me. Wait, where was that list? Where was that list again? Let me get those lists.
And none of them win.
That's a very good point.
All right.
That's a very good point.
Is it you're looking? Jerry is basically saying, dude, this is a Super Bowl championship roster that I have created for you, a Super Bowl championship roster. Let's go win it.
Reggie Bush is back. We're joined now by NBA analysts Ketino Mobley and Eddie House. Let's talk some hoops. Sponsored by Capital One. What's in your wallet? All right, let's move to Kevin Durant, who played in angry most of the season, but appears to have turned over a new leaf in these playoffs. Not only is he dominating on the court, he's having a good time doing it, telling our friend Chris Haynes, this is where bleep is fun. But despite his newly rediscovered happiness, most people are still convinced Durant will leave Golden State this summer to bolster his legacy by trying to lead a new franchise to a title. All right, the question here is, what should be a bigger priority for Kevin Durant, legacy or happiness? Because that's where I think he's at in his career. I think he can stay happy and content right there in Golden State, continue to win championships, mm-hmm. not have any pressure on him, or he can continue to set his sights on LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, and maybe even Michael Jordan by going to a new franchise, leading it to championships. Guy's 30 years old. I think he's pursued legacy, not happiness.
You know what? I love Kevin Durant's game. But what I would want to see from Kevin, if you're going to compare him to LeBron James, just my opinion. Mm-hmm. If you're going to compare him to LeBron James, go challenge yourself.
Yeah.
Because being in Golden State is not a challenge. Mm-mm. Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Iguodala, who came off the bench. They started in the finals a few years back and got MVP. That's not a challenge. A challenge is if you go to New York, where it's your team.
Go to the Clippers.
Oh, go to the Clippers.
Yeah.
It's your team. Now, not saying that I'm going to look at you differently, but I want to see more of a challenge because you left a team when you were up 3-1, and that the team that
playing
beat you.
Playing with Russell Westbrook's a challenge.
Well, listen.
That's a challenge.
It's a challenge. It's a challenge, but guess what? Would you rather be OKC or you'd rather be in Golden State? Which is easier for you?
Well, I'd rather be away from Westbrook, but that's just me.
Okay.
I think you got legacy and happiness go hand in hand, number one. Mm-hmm.
If you can't be happy without a great legacy, is that what you say?
Well, Michael Jordan, was he happy when he was losing to Boston? Was he happy when he was losing to Detroit? He built his legacy when he was happy, them three-peats. Mm-hmm. When you win, you're happy. When you're losing, you're miserable. That's for me.
So you look at Golden State.
Look what you do to LeBron this year. What you guys do to LeBron? He picked a legacy. Right now, you killing, saying his legacy getting dinged because he's not winning. Winning the happiness and winning is creating your legacy. So all this is tied together. One doesn't go without the other.
So you're saying it fuels you?
It's the same thing. You know, you've been on bad teams.
Yeah.
You're not happy. If y'all losing, you're not happy. You winning, yeah. You happy.
You're happy,
right? And where you building your legacy is when you're winning,
yep.
Right? And you're also happy at
but
the same time.
I took this question a little different because the legacy part for me is being at the top of one of the greatest to lead a team because football, yeah. Basketball, soccer, you have to lead a team.
Yeah.
And he hasn't led a team. That team is already in place.
Yeah.
So to go to New York for me would be more of a – that's where you put that stamp on your legacy because if you win...
Elevate your legacy.
Exactly.
I don't think he can elevate his legacy anymore in Golden
right,
State.
Why
right.
not? If they win four straight,
I don't
when have you seen somebody
Jason,
win four straight championships?
I'm still with Jason because you already had guys that was going to win without you anyway. That's
no,
my
they
point.
Didn't. They lost. And that's
no,
why
they won one.
They went and recruited him.
Right,
remember
they won one and then they lost.
Was up 3-1.
But yeah, but 73
wins. They needed
wins,
that closer.
That's the best record ever.
That's fine. The 73 wins is fine, but that has nothing to do with the playoff win. They didn't get to 16. You got to get to 16 more wins. All that 73 was under.
I seriously doubt if he wasn't
it's
there.
It's his team. It's his team, though.
No, it's Stephen
Golden State?
Yeah, it's
no,
his.
No, it's not.
When they need wait, let me ask you this. When they need a basket, where they go?
KD or they can go to Steph. They can go to
man. They going to KD. He gonna get that thing on the elbow.
So
he gonna go down to the block
so
and
he's
gonna get his shot.
Right.
Nobody can do anything about it.
I agree with you 100%. But it is still considered Steph's team.
But for a fact.
Well, like, of course, because he was there for it. But he was there really, for it. Really, though. That's just on the outside. Really.
But that's because it's a
team. Who was the dude?
But it's a team sport.
Really, who was the dude?
But it's a team sport. So if Michael Jordan in the first year in 91, Michael Jordan couldn't handle Magic Johnson, correct?
In 91?
91, he couldn't handle him in the playoffs. Who stepped in?
Well, yeah.
Scottie Pippen, because it's a team thing. So when you come to who is going to give me a bucket at the end of the game, yes, I'm going to KD. But we're talking about who team is it? Because when, as memory shows me correctly, this is third year.
Yeah.
And when Stephen Curry's out of the game or was not playing, their record is boo-boo compared to what he's supposed to be this all-time amazing.
Well, I think they got a chance. They've been winning.
I tweeted this the other day. I said Golden State is the only team that can lose their starting center and still be the most dangerous team in basketball.
There you go.
Because KD can play just about any position. I saw him blocking Capella's shot when Capella's trying to dunk on him. And I was like, that's what makes them special. That's what makes them different.
They lost Boogie Cousins, right? They had that was a team that won it, though, without Boogie Cousins. Yeah. So it's just the same team. Just because you lost, you just had an extra piece.
Let me ask you this, though, Reggie. In 30 years old, let's give him his third title this year, although he may not get it, but let's give it to him. What would you do in that situation? Go out, because again, to me and Coutinho believe, and he doesn't, he can't build his legacy any higher in Golden State.
No.
So again, do you can stay happy and go to stay happy.
That's
content.
Exactly. Yeah. That is so
what
true.
Would you do? Go out and continue to build your legacy, or be, I'm 30, I'm gonna be happy here.
I got to push back with
that's
that.
That's a tough question, man. Because if I feel like his legacy is already cemented as being one of the best, now if he goes on to go to another team,
he wants to be the greatest.
That and wants to be the greatest, then he has to leave.
There you go.
Because he can't do it there in Golden State.
There you go.
Well, if you win four, so let me say this: so we're gonna give him this one, right?
Yeah.
And he gets the MVP. So he has three straight finals, three straight finals MVP. Come back, they run it back, they win again. They got four, and he got another finals MVP. That's not elevating your legacy four straight final MVPs
like that makes him the
and four
team.
Straight.
What if Stephen Curry
and four
wasn't
straight?
Playing? What if Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson wasn't playing?
Here's the thing that you're missing, Eddie. Here's the thing
we can
missing.
Say it.
Does four straight titles, does that get you over Kobe? Does that get you over LeBron? Those are the hurdles he's trying to jump over. I don't know if you. I don't even know if five can do it in Golden State.
Y'all putting it on the fact that he had. It's about ring. At the end of the day, it's about rings. When they say who's the greatest of all time, what's the argument?
They don't say Bill Russell.
No, they say.
They don't say Bill Russell.
They don't say Bill Russell.
But
Bill Russell ain't the only one with 11. No, he ain't the only one with 11. That's maybe the top.
They don't say Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
No, they don't. They
say Michael Jordan.
They say Michael Jordan. He's 6-0.
Kareem got 6.
Michael Jordan is 6-0.
Why do they say Michael?
Why do
they say Michael?
Because Michael was just the best player. Period.
Well, if you're the best player, period. Need to guard Magic Johnson. You need to guard Magic Johnson for those next.
You can't talk about he didn't play no defense.
Like Karl Malone. But if Karl Malone's make those foul shots in 97 and 98, then it won't. The whole story and the circumstances will be totally different for the Chicago Bulls. Karl Malone choked on his foul shots.
Would that hurt his legacy? Jordan's legacy?
What do you mean hurt it?
That would have dinked his legacy, right? Regardless with the Scottie Pippen on his team, you would have dinked
everybody
it.
Everybody else always
armor,
the
right?
6-0 thing.
Because that's what it comes down to.
You're sitting here trying to tell me four titles get you over Kobe, get you over LeBron.
No.
It doesn't.
No.
It has to start pushing the needle over LeBron, though. You have to.
Let me ask this question.
You have, Eddie?
If LeBron stays in Miami, right, and they continue to win, does that cement his legacy or the fact that he went to Cleveland and then did it on his own?
That's a great point.
He elevated by going to Cleveland.
But look at though, that's also a gamble. Kevin Durant is not the same, but you guys just asking him to do what LeBron did. You can't take Kevin Durant and put him on that Cleveland team and Cleveland go to the finals and win a championship. LeBron James is a different player. He's a different type of player.
I know. What we're talking about, what we're asking him to do is, which got to give LeBron credit, I accomplished some things in Miami. Mm-hmm. I'm going to challenge myself again and do something no one thinks I can do. And so that's all we're not asking him to go to Cleveland and do what LeBron did. We're asking him, like, at age 30, are you willing to challenge yourself again, take on a whole new challenge? It looks pretty easy what y'all doing in Golden State. And I think Kevin Durant wants to take on that challenge.
So if he takes that challenge on, right, goes to New York or whatever, and he doesn't win, He doesn't win. Then what happens? Then you wasted times where you could have been winning it. At the end of the day, I'm getting my championships. Right. I'm still becoming the best player in the world at the same time while I'm doing it. Yep. It's not my fault I'm on this team. And they did a great job of being
the best player in the world when you have so much assistance. Mm-hmm. LeBron James.
LeBron had assistance in Miami when he won them too.
Right, but
he had D-Wade, top five player at the time.
Listen,
Bosh, top five at his position.
He averaged a triple-double in his loss, and they gave it to Iguodala, where he
led. That was bogus. That should have been Steph's.
What?
That MVP.
In that MVP championship?
Yeah, that should have been. You can't give Iguodala say he was stopping LeBron, and LeBron averaged a triple-double. Steph had 20, averaged 22 that year.
LeBron
he was no defensive stopper.
LeBron led in every category on both teams, one. And two is, when Magic, when Michael Jordan played, they won in 93, okay? 94, Scottie Pippen was one whistle away from going back to the championship. One game. They won 57 games in 93, 55 in 94.
They needed the black cat. But when he came back, what they do?
But my point is, in the East back then, you know how hard that was to win? And you one whistle away from going back to the NBA championship?
Yeah, I understand that. You guys want Kevin Durant to basically say, hey, you know what? To hell with what I got going here, this great thing that I got that I'm building. His legacy is started because he came to Golden State.
No, start your legacy somewhere.
His legacy started because he came to Golden State.
What Kevin Durant seems to want to do. It ain't just us. Kevin Durant, I think, wants to challenge himself.
Well, I wouldn't be mad at him, but it's not a guarantee. How they say the grass is greener on the other side. No, it's not. Sometimes you get over there, it's a bunch of rocks.
And I think when you match up, when you talk about LeBron James, he's the ultimate leader because he makes everybody around him better. Can KD do that? Can he go to New York and make that whole organization better?
I completely just, LeBron diminishes everyone around him. He's great.
He's the system. LeBron is the system. That's why.
Look, man, Chris Bosh was a spot-up shooter. Kevin Love, a spot-up shooter. Dwayne Wade was damn near in tears, had to give up his team. LeBron diminishes everyone.
He said he was in tears.
Reggie Bush, Mark Slareth, and Eddie House are back. Time to get antisocial, my favorite segment. All right, Darnell, our social media manager.
What's going on, y'all? Look at it.
Bro, you did some traps and some buys today?
Come on now. You see them, don't you, Reg?
You fresh off the gym, huh?
Fresh off.
Well, you know what? If you played the NFL, there'd be a random drug test every day.
No, you ain't talking slow.
You big over there, bro. You too big behind that desk.
Twitter street.
Yes, sir. We're going to start off with the new look Browns. Yesterday, we talked about Greedy Williams already predicting the Super Bowl. And now OBJ is claiming that the Browns are gunning for the Cowboys title of America's team. Take a listen.
Jarvis called me before. He was like, what you want to do?
Come be the dog. Come be a dog, you know?
I was like, man, it's going down? He said, I think so. You just say the word if you don't want to or if you do want to.
All right, guys. Should the Cowboys be nervous?
No. because
it's too early.
It ain't even about winning when it comes to the Cowboys. How long has it been since they won a Super Bowl?
A long time.
It's the star on the helmet.
Right. Yeah.
And so, unless ownership is the state of Texas, look, high school football is a big deal in Ohio as well. But those Browns uniforms don't compare. People pick teams based on uniforms. I was a Los Angeles Rams fan as a kid because I loved the uniforms. Cowboys got better uniforms. They can't be America's team.
Yeah, it's you got to go through a decade of winning before you can even talk about being America's team. I think they can be the feel good Cinderella team of the year,
right.
But being America's team, that's going to take a lot more.
In September, they were the factory of sadness. Now in May, they're the America's team? They're this delusional team. Greedy Williams, a rookie, ain't put a squirt of piss in the bucket, is talking about winning a Super Bowl. This is the America's delusional team.
Eddie, what would you do, man, if a rookie came in and talking like that?
Ooh, we would be like, chill out, man. Chill out. You got too much heat on. You gonna put too much smoke on.
Right.
I'll say they're the social media team in the NFL because you got he's polarizing OBJ, and then you got Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
How good is he on social media?
Right. You know,
trolling his coach that one time.
Big
time. I mean, he's great. Jarvis Landry, the same
all these
thing.
Guys.
So
big personalities over there.
Yeah.
Social media's team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll give you that title, OBJ.
Yes, sir. Next! Yeah, moving on to Whitlock's guy, Jamaal Charles, who spent majority of his career with the Kansas City Chiefs. He's currently their all-time leader in rushing yards, running for over 7,000 yards and 43 touchdowns during his tenure. He officially decided to hang up his cleats this week, and yesterday signed a one-day contract to retire as a Chief. And before he left, he got one last handoff from MVP Patrick Mahomes. Mm. Good moment here. We know Charles had an injury-riddled career, but still believes he's a Hall of Famer. Whitlock, I'm going to start with you. Is it crazy to think Jamaal Charles is a Hall of Famer?
Why y'all putting me on the spot?
That's your guy.
I know. And I gotta be honest though.
Speak for yourself.
This ain't Terrell Davis. Where the Super Bowl rings at, Jamal? Where was the parade at? I mean, this ain't Gale Sayers.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't see. I see Ring of Honor in his future with the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
But Hall of Fame, no.
Yeah, I would agree. Ring of Honor. I think it'll be a little tough. As I was just looking through the list of like a lot of the great running backs who've come before him who are not even in the Hall of Fame yet,
right.
I think he's got a tough task ahead of him.
Yeah, I mean, 7,500 plus yards rushing, 2,500 plus yards receiving. I think just based on stats, and a lot of the voters, you have to understand, are going to look at stats and stats only.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's not strong enough. Now, I would tell you this, as a guy who studies a lot of film, that's one of the baddest mothers I've ever watched play. He's one of the most complete football players I ever watched play. So from that standpoint, is he a Hall of Famer in my mind? Yeah. But the longevity aspect of it, lack of Super Bowl championships, and the lack of total production is going to keep him out in the voters' mind.
Yeah, no Super Bowls, doesn't have 10,000 yards rushing. I think he's not even in the top 20. So there's no way you could be a Hall of Famer not in the top 20.
Next!
All right, y'all, let's hit the hardwood. Yesterday was the 21-year anniversary of Spike Lee's famous movie, He Got Game, starring Ray Allen, a.k.a. Gigi Shuttlesworth, and Denzel Washington. And just a little FYI, my guy Kobe was supposed to take the role, but he was a little too busy training that summer. That's why he's the greatest.
Shoulda, coulda, woulda.
He's the greatest. Anyways, this movie is considered to be one of the best sports films of all time. So, in your guys' opinion, what sports movie is the GOAT?
Ooh, I got to go with Any Given Sunday. That's my game, probably because I'm a football player. But Any Given Sunday, man, that was like, when I watched that movie, I was like, this is football. Like, this is football right here.
I'm going dodgeball. You can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball. I tell you, White Goodman, are you kidding me? Globo Gym, we're better than you, and we know it. That's like my motto, man. I love that movie.
I like that. That's a good call, Eddie.
I got to go, I had to go with my sport as well. White Man Can't Jump.
Ooh,
I mean, it's just, I mean, come on. Trash talking, hoop, Rosie Perez back in the day. I was like, ooh, okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Hey. I had that one scene where I was like, okay, pause.
Rewind.
Bruh, I love that movie.
All right, I'm going to show my age. Y'all may not, Mark knows the movie, Brian's Song. About Gale Sayers and Brian Piccolo.
I can't even watch it.
It's a true story.
Oh, maybe.
You've never seen Brian's Songs, Reggie?
I've seen Brian's
Songs. It's a hell of a movie.
It makes you cry. Oh, yeah, you cry like a baby.
It's a true story. Gale Sayers' teammate was Brian Piccolo in their primes. Brian Piccolo dies of cancer. This was back when Hollywood and the media used to actually try to promote understanding and good relationships between black and white people. It was made in that vein. Now all the movies in Hollywood try to have us at each other's throats. Brian's Song's great movie.
That's a great one. Speaking of football movies, I've got an honorable mention, All the Right Moves with Tom Cruise.
Oh, high school football.
And Pipe, remember that? That was a great
see
movie.
That you got a movie.
Y'all dating
now.
Yourselves up here.
Yeah.
I didn't see that one either.
We always laugh.
For me, it had to be Remember the Titans. Great movie.
Oh, that's a great
That'll make you cry, too.
Bringing people together. One of the best movies of all time.
All right, next!
All right, let's keep it on the hardwood, where Carmelo Anthony has entertained the idea of going back to the Knicks. The 10-time All-Star spent 6 seasons in New York and didn't seem to rule out a return when he was asked about the potential of his former team signing Warriors superstar Kevin Durant this summer. Guys, does Melo sound desperate here?
Man, bring Hoodie Melo back, man.
Bring him back?
I need Hoodie Melo back in the league, man. I'm a big Carmelo fan. Known him for a while, known his wife for a while. I think the world of a man, I would love to see him back on a team that has good pieces around him, too.
Right.
Myself, I would love to see him back, too, because what it doesn't sound desperate. What it sounds like to me, he loves and misses the game.
Yeah,
and I know that feeling. Like, when you first out, you watching these guys in the playoffs, you love and miss the game, man. And that's all I hear from him.
Come on, Witt. Don't do anything like that.
What's that?
He out in the desert, man, just looking for some water.
Extra thirsty?
Thirsty, man. Thirsty, yeah. I've been this thirsty, though. I never check my DMs late at night. I've been this thirsty.
Well, over there, you got to get in the water, huh?
I mean, you know, like, I'm not gonna hate on a guy for wanting to get back in. Yep. I think there comes a time in your life too when you start to look at things differently, as opposed to being a star, saying, man, I wanna have a taste of being a guy that helps my team do whatever I can to win a championship. Mm-hmm. And that's, I don't know that you can do it at yeah, well, it's not. And you probably can't do that at the Knicks, right? Yeah. So yeah.
He just wants to check. All right, time for Darnell's question of the day. Take it away.
All right, guys. So apparently Joe Theismann gave Dwayne Haskins the green light to wear his number 7 for the Redskins. Been a huge deal over social media. So I want to ask you guys, why do jersey numbers matter so much to athletes?
That's the swag, man. You want to keep the same number that you had.
Huh?
Why? Because, I mean, if you killed it in that number, then you want to keep it. Like, when I got into the NFL, I tried to go after number 5. I tried to challenge the NFL and try to keep number 5. I don't understand. The bigger question is, why is the NFL so controlling over jersey numbers? Like, why do running backs have to wear 20s and 30s? Some of them numbers are
like, you're still
numbers.
Mad about some.
I am mad about it. I wanted to wear number 5.
That was my number 2.
I wanted to wear number 5, and they didn't let me. I just don't understand. Like, it's football. We know everybody who's in this supposed to be in their positions. The number isn't going to confuse anybody. They do it in college. They do it in high school. Why can't we do it in the NFL?
Because they don't want you to do it. They want to keep the thumb on you. Mm-hmm. Here's what I don't understand. Why did Dwayne Haskins need to get the papal blessing of Joe Theismann, who hasn't played there since 85? Like, that's what
his
I like.
Number retired.
No, it's not.
No, it's not retired.
It's not retired.
That don't make no sense. Yeah. Come on. I'm asking somebody, I could get the number and I got to ask him. Right. Stop it. Yeah. Don't knock it off.
I just don't see, is a 20, is that a heavier jersey than a 5?
It's what? Not. For me, I had significance. For my, I like number 5. I was born in May, the 5th month, 14, 145, a bunch of stuff. At 78, 15 divided by 3 is 5. Oh, I had a bunch of little, 5 people in my family. Wow. So I was like, 5 is my number, right? And I was rocking with it. So a lot of people have, it means something. That number really means something to them. Coutinho was telling us in the green room, he was drafted 41st. And he just put 4 and 5, 4 and 1 together to create 5 because he felt like he was better than everybody else. But that was the significance for him to take that number.
Did you ever have to pay for a jersey number?
No, I just couldn't get them. Like my OGs, like the older state, like my last year in Miami, I wanted to get 5. I wore 5 my first stint there, and Juwan Howard had it. So I had to flip it and go to 55.
Yeah,
so.
Gotcha.
So for me, I was a 10th rounder out of Idaho. They handed me 69. That's what I wore. I just wanted a suit. Man, you guys are you're a first rounder. Yeah, like, you're gonna get a suit. I was just begging for a suit. Just give me one suit, man.
If Gronk had known it was that easy to get number 69, he would have.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Tino Mobley and Eddie House are back. Let's return to the NBA playoffs, where the Rockets must be relieved after tests showed that James Harden suffered no cornea damage from his eye injury in game 2. Harden and Houston will try to battle their way back into the series in game 3 on Saturday, but health might not actually be the reigning MVP's biggest issue, with his playoff numbers falling long before Draymond Green poked him in the eye. Over the last 3 years, under Mike D'Antoni, Harden has struggled to replicate his regular season dominance, with his scoring, shooting, and assist all taking a big dip once he reaches the playoffs. Look, I think James Harden, I heard Cowherd say this earlier, and I agree with him. I have a little different point. He James Harden and Russell Westbrook play so much harder than everybody else during the regular season that when it comes to the postseason and everybody's playing hard, they take a little dip. And James Harden's a guy, much respect, plays all 82, likes to get his points, likes to get his bucket. But when it comes to playoff basketball, and Kevin Durant talked about this yesterday with Chris Haynes, when people are game planning for you and they have a specific game plan for you over the course of 2 weeks, it's a different brand of basketball. And there are some guys, Kevin Durant, LeBron James, that elevate during the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And there are other guys that tread water or take a step back. And I think James Harden's one of those guys.
I agree with you. I've always was saying that, like, the workload that he carried this year just to get them back into the playoff picture, is it sustainable? That's what I was wondering. And when it comes to the playoffs, yeah, they're game planning for you. But Coutinho, we shoot when you're a jump shooter, right? When your jumper is off, it's because your legs went. Yeah. When you don't have any legs, you fatigue, that's the first thing to go is your jump shot. And it's proof right here with his three-point shot in the playoffs. He's over 40% only one time from three. Mm-hmm. He's been under 30 three times. I mean, that's unacceptable. That's a direct reflection of fatigue in the legs. That's what goes. And also game planning. So when you have guys game planning for you and you don't have the same energy that you would have in the middle of the season, you're going to see the effects of that in your jump shot. And I think more his game is built for the playoffs. I think more so what he has to do is understand where to get his shots, how to get him shots. The regular season is totally different from the playoffs. You got to constantly adjust, and that's what the playoffs is about, adjustments. Game in, game to game, quarter to quarter, and he has to make those adjustments. And right now I don't see him making those.
Well, you know, I said this a few years back also. And I tried to speak to James about just more so, you know how I play like kind of 15 feet in, Kobe, myself, we're more post-up guards. And it kind of, what it does is not only does it helps you rest, but it takes the defender's legs away from them. So when it's time for them to play on offense, they're not as efficient. Now I'm looking here right now, and James shot 40%, 46, 50%, and 42, 43%. That's not bad, but that's fool's gold too. I mean, should you be shooting that many threes when you can really dominate more? Now, you know what Utah and the rest of these teams are saying? I'm going to let you get yours. I'm going to make it tough for you, but I'm not letting nobody else eat in the playoffs. We're not talking about regular season, the playoffs, because from studying tapes to doing all these different things, they're saying, okay, we're going to do the probability. I'm going to let James do this, and we're just going to contest. Or I'm not going to let P.J. Tucker. I'm not going to let Eric Gordon. I'm not going to let Capella. I'm not going to let this guy, that guy beat us. I'm just going to let James do his thing, and he's going to wear out. And during the regular season, they were 14th in the West.
Yeah, he
went on that run. He was back up to the fourth place. That takes a lot out of you. So now you're talking about the playoffs where that team gets the key on you for seven straight games. That's really hard to do.
Does James Harden's play elevate the players around him? I know it leads to wins because he did take him on that run during the regular season, and he has a little system that works, he and D'Antoni, that works for wins. But when it comes down to a seven-game series against top-flight opponents, does it bring out the best in his peers and his teammates? Because, again, it's one thing to stand on the side and watch this dude work in the regular season. But when mom and them's watching and the cousins and everybody's watching, it's the playoffs, your boys are watching, everybody wants to be more a part of it, I think, than James allows.
But you have to do your job. So you know what you were brought there for. You know James is the guy. So if you're supposed to stand in the corner, don't complain now because the regular season you was eating in the corner and wasn't tripping. But now because it's the playoffs, all of a sudden you got to switch and say, hey, I need to get more shots because that's not the case. You should just do your job. And over the last 5 years, he's elevated his assist. So he has been getting guys going. That's the reason why I think they've been championship contenders is because he has got other guys involved. Before, it was just strictly him. And if he was cold, it was all bad for him. Now he has other guys that are involved in the game. I think, actually, D'Antoni can do a better job getting those role players involved early in the game. He's just constantly James and Chris the whole time. You got to get PJ some easy things.
But I don't think – this is the thing, and you make a great point, both of you. But I don't think – see, and Eddie, you can attest to this. If James has an A, a B, a C, and a D. If you cut off A, he's going to do B. He's going to do C, he's going to D. Everybody don't have that. So even if the P.J. Tuckers of the world or Clint Capellas of the world, whoever it is, when you cut off their A, they don't have a B. So that's what, in the playoffs, you have to have a B, a C, and a D. Trevor Ariza, Mabute.
Yeah.
That was hard for them losing those guys. Because even though Trevor's not really an off-the-dribble guy, he still penetrated and did different things. I think that's what helped them last year. Now, you have guys this year where only thing they do is shoot the ball. They're not really getting to the free throw line. They're not really creating for everybody else. They're just waiting for James to do something, and the other teams are keying in on it.
We talked yesterday, and we got to be quick, but Kendrick Perkins made the point that Houston's getting
punked in this series. Mm-hmm. The intangibles, they're not rebounding well. The Golden State is imposing as well. Golden State's really not playing that well. That's the other thing about...
That's Mike D'Antoni's teams.
That's D'Antoni more than
that's D'Antoni's teams.
Yeah, I play with Mike, and that's the thing. He's going to focus more on offense than defense, and that's he doesn't like confrontation, so his teams are usually a reflection of your head coaches, and he doesn't like confrontation. I think the thing with Houston is they're pointing too many fingers right now. They're getting caught up in everything else, and I think they psyched themselves out game two. I think they were so worried about the referees, and then they found out Scott Foster was going to be the referee on the
whammy.
Crew. So they automatically went there like, oh, we about to get the bad end of the stick, the short end of the stick. It's going to be
they
all bad for us.
They manifested that.
And, yeah, and once they thought that, they just left themselves to have any kind of excuse for anything.
Eddie, in the next segment, I want to get into something Coutinho said. Coutinho compared himself to Kobe Bryant. I just want you and I to have a moment to talk about that and say if there's any truth to that.
Yeah, okay.
You compared yourself to Kobe Bryant. But we'll get into it to the next segment, Coutinho.
I compare myself to Kobe.
I'd like to say a word or two about the woke media's fraudulent concern about being on the right side of history. Coutinho, you got to take a joke. It was this alleged concern that made Colin Kaepernick the absolute darling of the sports media for 3 years. The woke anointed Kaepernick, the modern Muhammad Ali, and proclaimed history would frown on those of us who recognize Cap's national anthem gimmick as an identity crisis, shakedown scheme, and tantrum. The media do not care about history. We care about clicks and the appearance of moral superiority. If we cared about history's judgment at all, we would be railing against our government for using the FBI to enforce NCAA amateurism rules. Grown men with families are being sentenced to jail as a result of the federal publicity stunt known as the Adidas trial. Christian Dawkins, Merle Code, and James Gatto have already been convicted and sentenced for defrauding universities by funneling money to the families of prominent players. And this week, the sports media clutched its pearls because a wiretap caught Dawkins alleging that Arizona coach Sean Miller paid star center DeAndre Ayton $10,000 a month. Oh, the horror. Sean Miller allegedly shared his wealth with a kid who helped him earn it. You'd think Miller would be a hero. Instead, the right side of history media are calling for Arizona to fire Miller. Yahoo Sports' Pete Thamel asked yesterday, how much longer can Arizona employ Miller? Why are we not asking how much longer is our government going to allow college presidents, they're the liberal elites in control of the NCAA system, to run an exploitation system that was analogized to slavery by its modern-day architect, Walter Byers? Here's what Byers, the former president of the NCAA and a white conservative from Kansas, wrote in his 1997 memoir. Today, the NCAA's President's Commission is preoccupied with tightening a few loose bolts in a worn machine, firmly committed to the neo-plantation belief that the enormous proceeds from college games belong to the overseers slash administrators and supervisors slash coaches. The plantation workers performing in the arena may only receive those benefits authorized by the overseers. The history has been written on amateurism. It's a sham. It was created in the 19th century to shield the elite from competing against people who had to work for a living. It's not an opinion, that's a fact. It takes no courage and accomplishes nothing for the media to defend Colin Kaepernick's right to throw a tantrum during the national anthem. Just push out an I'm with Cap hashtag, throw on a 7 jersey or equality t-shirt, and you fought the power. Standing against an exploitive amateurism system controlled by academic elites who are sitting silently as our government jails objectors requires a bit more substance. The right side of history on amateurism might require you to publicly defend the men and women bold enough to play the players who generate all the cash. All right, welcome back. Marcellus Wiley's off today. Coutinho Mobley and Eddie House are back. Let's move to Denver, where Damian Lillard had an off night, but the Trailblazers still found a way to edge out the Nuggets last night to even their series at 1-1. But they're not the only team in good position to pull off an upset. In the East, the Celtics stole home court from the Bucks and will face off in Game 3 tomorrow in Boston. All right, gentlemen, the question here is, which of these underdogs has the best chance of pulling off a second-round upset here, Trailblazers or Celtics?
I don't even like calling them underdogs. Who was the team to beat in the East?
Lower seeds. We'll call them lower seeds. Which of these lower seeds? Kobe. I'm sorry, Coutinho. has the best
don't do that, because I love Kobe. Stop, man. He's going to call me and cuss me out. Stop. Don't do that. No, but look, seriously, I like the Trailblazers. But I think the Celtics have more. They have Kyrie Irving. So I don't care what Milwaukee did the other day.
Portland has Damian Lillard.
Yeah, but I'm just saying. I'm talking about on the East, right? Yep. I think it's harder. It's harder for.
If you had to bet, which one's pulling off the upset?
Celtics.
I say Celtics too.
Yeah.
I got
you a homer.
No, I'm not. I'm gonna tell you. This is the reason though. Can Milwaukee make 23s again? I doubt it. I don't think they can make 23s. They actually played right into the Celtics' hands. The Celtics just couldn't hit shots.
Yep.
You want them to shoot that many threes. You want to keep them out the paint. You want to. And this other thing, you could game plan Giannis.
But they've been shooting threes the whole year, though.
Yo, they have been. They have been. Okay. But you want to funnel them to shoot threes.
Right.
Your main thing is to keep Giannis out the paint.
Right.
And that's what they've been doing a great job of. So, and I think they have more guys that can win their one-on-one battles more often.
And that's what
you say you can game, but don't you think at some point Giannis is going to go off? They've done a great job the first two games. At some point, he's going to be the Greek freak.
I don't think – this is why. He doesn't have a great outside shot, right? As great as big as he is, how great of a season he had, if you see what Al Horford do, you put size on him and then you pack it in. You make him become a decision maker
right. When
he gets around the rim. Indecision, do I pass? That's all you're trying to do is give him some looks that he hasn't seen before. You want don't let him get anything easy, because all year has just been easy.
You're placing your bets. I'm going on Celtics defense against him more than the Milwaukee Bucks are going
knocking
to shoot and make 23s.
Thank you.
That's what I'm going on. I'm going to Celtics defense.
I would go with Portland, because I think that Damian Lillard, having gotten this victory last night, we're just having an average 14-point game. I think Damian Lillard is going to be the star of this postseason, get his little second-round victory. Again, I don't think they're going to win the Western Conference Finals, but I think Portland's on a roll and the confidence, and I think they got the right opponent. I mean, it's nice. Denver's a nice little story. Jokic is a nice little story. But at the end of the day, I would rather have Dame Lillard than anybody on that court.
And that's a good point, but sometimes that's fool's gold, because if Damian Lillard's having a bad game, everybody else is touching the ball. He's not going to try to shoot him out of the game because he plays for a team. Now, if he gets hot, what does that do to everybody else, continuity-wise, opposed to Denver? And that's all they do is pass around to each other and play with each other, right? So I just think, yes, Portland's good. But if Denver, if Damian Lillard gets 40, I don't know if...
Got 39 in the first game and they lost. That's your point.
CJ and Dame are the focal point of that, right? So the role players, they're hit and miss. The others are hit and miss.
Right.
You don't know. They're not going to give you something consistent right now. I look at the Celtics roster, it's more reliable. Their roster from top to bottom is more reliable. I look at the guys that come in off the bench. I trust them more than the guys coming in off the bench for Portland. Plus, they lost Yusuf Nurkic. That hurt them. So now they're shorthanded at the center position, who was a big part of what they did. So... With that alone, I thought the Celtics was going to go to the finals from the start of the year.
And I don't trust Enes Kanter mentally every game.
Why not?
He does something silly with inside the game, and as you know,
one or two
possessions can cost you a series.
I thought they overreacted.
Me too.
That last
with the double tech.
Sure. Yeah,
for sure they did.
You know, everybody getting up, everybody's
face.
I don't think he did that intentionally.
Well, he got pushed first.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was
Jokic
a flop
pushing.
Push.
Yeah, it he pushed him and he put extra on it.
Yeah, he put extra on it. He put a little bit of mustard on it.
He pushed him and he put extra on it.
Yeah.
And so you guys think the inconsistency we saw in Boston during the regular season won't rear its head in this postseason, in this series with the Milwaukee Bucks?
I don't think so. I think for this reason. You look at how at the beginning of the season you had Gordon Hayward coming back, right? He's trying to find himself, which he looks like himself of late, right? That took away from Jaylen Brown. During the regular season, cats is trying to, you know, position theyself in the lineup and also position theyself to get paid, you know, when they come up in free agency. So at the beginning of the year, during the regular season, there's a lot of pulling and tugging and no give, you know what I mean, and all take. Right now you in the playoffs, everybody's like, okay, that's done. We all in. We got one goal, one mission.
Uncle Jimmy's here. What are your thoughts on the show so far, Uncle Jimmy?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say good evening. I want to say welcome to the one and only Mark Celibate. We're glad to have you here, brother.
Appreciate that.
It's Mark Slayer.
And I would like to say also, brother Usher, can you make sure that brother Celibate gets that offering plate around here to him? it's very, very seldom we get these fine, white, distinguished gentlemen here, and I know he wants to tithe to the Lord.
You got a big dummy of the
day. I just want to say we're here at the Good Queen Mother Boutique, Gold Front, Check Cashing, Church of God in Christ. P.S., we want to tell you, we like that quiet money, Mark. You more than welcome now.
You got a big dummy of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's you. How you going to sit up and talk about Jamal Charles ain't no Hall of Famer? All right. You ain't welcome in Kansas City or Gates. How about that? Lord told me to tell you. Come on, let's go.
All right, here's a highlight from our discussion earlier about Dwayne Haskins. History says Haskins won't be the answer in Washington. He thinks the league done messed up when it's actually the Redskins. But what do I know? I ate everything.
You talk about Haskins, unbelievable. Unbelievable what he did. But you always have to look back and say, how come you couldn't beat out JT Barrett?
All right, Uncle Jimmy, my big knock on all these young quarterbacks, just not enough playing experience in college. Experience is the best indicator, anyway, of NFL success. Anyway, what's your take?
First of all, I'm so happy. I'm so glad that you've been enlightened to come to the realization of the power of age, wisdom, and seasoning. And all of these things is crucial for your future success in life. You must understand that.
I do understand.
You understand that?
Yeah.
See, right now, I think it's about time that we sit down and look at the fact that Uncle Jimmy we need to start negotiating the fact that Uncle Jimmy getting some playing time in the first half of the game. unlike that not so ready for prime time inexperienced player you got, the Darnell Smith.
Yeah, earlier in the show, you want to move your segment up.
Look, here's all I'm trying to say. I'm trying to figure out how you going to take a Kyler Murray, a LaDainian Jones, even a Dwayne Haskins, and now you going to hold them to a standard you don't even hold your own Darnell Jones to.
Darnell Smith.
Look at you get behind in the fourth quarter. Who you call? Who come in the fourth quarter to win the game every time? Last 5 minutes, Uncle Jimmy. Who the people tune in to see? Uncle Jimmy. Let me tell y'all, so let me speak on the power of experience.
Yeah.
Let me speak to you. Let me tell you something. You speak on my powers of experience. Ask anybody, huh? Ask anybody my powers, ask them what I do. Young girls come up to me all the time and say, ooh, Uncle Jimmy. Uncle Jimmy said the young boys can't do it like you do. They think they know the secret. They think it's my special sauce. it's real, but we know what it is, Mark. It's that crock pot love. That's what it is.
It's crock pot love.
See, y'all young girls don't know about that crock pot love. See, the crock pot love, so you can get it late at night. So you walk in, you put it down, you put some meat and some onions and carrots, start marinating in the middle of the night. It's called that crock pot love. Y'all don't hear me. Get it early in the morning. Smell real good. Called that. Crockpot love. Say it with me, Mark.
Okay.
Called crockpot love.
Crockpot love.
That's what I'm talking about. See that, nephew? The good book say that you gotta take a rich man to ride through the eye of a camel to get into the eagles, get to the eye of heaven. If he had a bag of money. I'm here to tell you, you find me dead as hell on a camel with a bag of money. With a needle in your eye. Because y'all gonna pay me one way or another. God like what God like, and there's nothing but the truth.
Does this have anything to do with Dwayne Haskins?
Jimmy's on the main line. Tell me what you want.
I want you to say something about Dwayne Haskins. Does any of this have to do with Dwayne Haskins?
Yes, yes. I'm so glad you did. The Bible say that a fool and his money should soon depart. Depart with my money, fool. Tell him what I said, Mark.
He said depart with his money.
Let me get to my approval rating. Ooh. Dwayne Haskins, I got him at a 56. 18 job performance, 4 all-time greatness, a 19 in character, 15 in authenticity. I didn't like the little comment about the league done messed up. 56 total.
Yeah. Well, I've got job performance at 20. All-time status, as you can see right there, at 10.
Well, he played one season.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He only gets a 10 out of 25. It's too high. Character, I'm sure he's a good kid. Okay.
Yeah, good kid.
20, good kid. Authenticity, I went 15. Like, you showed up to meet with Elway in an Elway jersey.
Flattery.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.